Hello everyone, this is Griffin and this is Flight Sim Edge. And the first thing I want to do is make my apologies. I don't say this as an excuse, but it is the reality of the situation. When I made the preview in the first podcast, I had it out for a while, and the only person that listened to it was myself. And then everything hit full bore as far as the pandemic goes. My wife is a teacher, and she had a lot of challenges at the last part of the school year, and I have a teenage daughter that lives with us, and she couldn't go to school anymore, and so there was a lot of things going on, and I didn't think anyone was listening to the podcast, and I didn't add any content. I thought, well, I got to come up with a way to promote it and have people, be exposed to it. There's no point in doing a second episode if no one's listening to it. Fast forward, few months later, several months later, I should say, and I clicked on my Anchor app by accident. I make this podcast on Anchor over my phone. You could probably tell by the lack of technical sophistication of my podcast, but and I clicked on it by accident, and I saw that it was listened to by almost 100 people. And I felt absolutely awful. Here are these people waiting for a second episode to be released, and it never was. And so if I knew that there were people, if I thought 30 people were listening to my podcast, I would have continued released subsequent episodes. I want to say that I'm internally grateful to everybody that's listened to the show. And I thank you for that. And hopefully we're going to come up with some exciting episodes now and in the future. So let's move right on into the second episode. Some of you guys have waited long enough for this. And so let's get it on. The Lane, the boxing referee, says. Boxing, another passion of mine, by the way. A lot has happened in the flight simulator universe, obviously from when I released the first podcast to now. And I want to say that we're going to come out with a third podcast fairly soon, probably within 3 or 4 days of this one, because we just have so much to talk about. This is actually my third recording of the show, and there's just so much content that I bounce all over the place, and it just was not good. So I'm going to try to do this in segments that make sense. The big news is that on August 18th, Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 was released, and I think that it's changed the culture immensely. First of all, the popularity of it is something that even I did not foresee. You could look at the marketplace and know that that's the case. Good luck trying to find a honeycomb yoke, if that's the yoke of your choice, for Microsoft 2020, Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020, they are all gone. They are all gone. The only ones I've seen for sale are ones on eBay, and they're being sold between the $350 and $400 price point. And it's my belief that these are flight enthusiasts that already had a honeycomb yoke. They probably bought it for their X-Plane 11 setup or their P3D setup, and they they're like, you know what? I'm going to sell this yoke system for $400 and I'll just wait for them to re-release to bring the models back out on the market, and I'll buy one then, and I can pocket $200 profit. And in these times, who could blame anyone for doing that? There's nothing wrong with doing that. And that's what I think. I don't think somebody bought a 250 flight yoke and decided that simulation's not for them, and decided to sell it. And, oh, well, it's scarce, so I'll just sell it for the highest price that I could get. I think that these are people that, you know, are already enthusiasts. They bought the flight yoke because that's the yoke they wanted. And they now see that there's a critical demand for the yoke, and they can make a few extra bucks. And then, you know, when the yokes become more prevalent and back out on the market, they'll buy one, a new one at the $250 price. And they got $150-$200 or more in their pocket that they could use to upgrade their computer system or who knows what. So, or even get the Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. Maybe they can't afford it. They want to get the premium edition, and they can't, and that's the one they want. And so, yeah, I'm going to sell my flight yoke. I'm going to get $400 for it, and then I'm going to buy the Microsoft Flight Simulator and use my old joystick with it, or my old Satech yoke with it. And do that until Honeycomb can catch up to the marketplace and meet the demand, and then I'll just buy another Honeycomb yoke, and I've made a few bucks, and there's nothing wrong. That's what people want to do. That there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I think the Honeycomb became immensely popular because it was one of the few yokes that was recognized. And when I say recognized, I mean that it's pre-programmed to work within Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. And from what I can see, there's not a huge peripheral list out there. There really isn't. I love to know if, you know, the panels are working with Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 natively out of the box. I know that there's a way to program different yokes that aren't supported natively out of the box. I'm going to have to do that with my CH Products Eclipse yoke. It is completely not recognized. I mean, it's recognized when you go to the yoke's hardware, you know, it has the name of it on the top of the screen, but there's nothing that's been assigned to it. It doesn't interact with the aircraft at all. You can move the yoke to the right or to the left. You don't see any ailerons used. You can use the paddle flipper rudders, and you don't see any rudder movement change. No buttons work, no nothing. So I'm going to have to program those from scratch. I had tried to do that just on my own, and I can tell you, I haven't been able to do it. This simulator is serious business. There is definitely a learning curve on it. And, pausing here. Okay. I could not do it. I'm, you know, maybe I'm an idiot, and that's fine. I, you know, sometimes things just fly over me, and there's not much I can do. But luckily, there is a content creator on YouTube. His name is Squirrel, and there's another one called, oh man, Sim UK or UK Sim. I'll look him up while I'm talking to you guys, and I'm going to my computer. Today we're going to talk about my hardware specs and where it falls on the Microsoft universe. And let's see if I can go to my subscriptions. Is he there? Hoping that he is. And what my build philosophy is, I do build computers. SimuK, that's him. And he has, and I have yet to look at it, but I'm looking at, it says, how to set up almost, and he has that in bold capital letters, any controller in Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. And he released that 3 days ago from this recording, which is the 24th of August, 2020. I hope everybody there is, that's listening to this is safe and is well. And so Squirrel and SimUK, God, I keep wanting to say UK Sim and that's wrong, has a fair amount of content, technical content and tutorials for the new flight simulator. Squirrel talks about his setup, and his rudder pedals are not native. They're not recognized out of the box. And he briefly talks about how he sets up his rudder pedals. So between that and SimUK, I'm hoping I'm going to be able to figure out how to program my CH Products Eclipse yoke. If not, I'm going to have to sell it and get a honeycomb. But I'm hopeful that I'll be able to figure it out. But I think, and this is we can talk about this because it is dealing with hardware. I think at this point, the peripheral list for Flight Simulator 2020 is pretty low, surprisingly low. I would have thought just about any controller that was recognized by Flight Simulator 10 or FSX would automatically be recognized by the new Flight Simulator. I mean, the code would be more or less the same. I'm not a coder, so I don't know for sure. I'm sure that there would be some differences and some updates that would have to be made to run those things in the new coding. But yeah, and I'm fascinated to know if the panels are working and don't need to be programmed. SATEC has some radio control panels that are pretty cool, and they have these little digital boxes that you can use for multi instruments to set up. And then there's all kinds of professional, if you can call it that, simulation stuff. I mean, with as far as the throttles go, I mean, there's people that have entire 737s with all customized stuff, and they're doing it in P3D, and they're doing it in X-Plane 11. Are they going to be able to do that with the new flight simulators? You know, with the new flight simulator, it would be tragic if that's not the case, because those are the people that really push the hobby to the next level. I wish that I could have that kind of technical know-how and ingenuity to be able to build something like that. My hardware configuration is based on a couple of things. One is size. I have a mid ATX case. Let's see. Let's go. What am I doing? I'm in the wrong thing already. So, I'm basically just doing things on the computer while I'm talking to you guys. Is that what it's called? Mid ATX? Uh, I always forget this term. It's the medium size ATX board. It's a little bit smaller than a full ATX. Or maybe it's just called, let me try MATX. Jesus. I hope I don't have to redo this podcast because of this. Yeah, that's what it's called. It's called MATX as opposed to an ITX motherboard. So this case is designed to take an MATX, micro ATX, that's the term. Shoo! A micro ATX board, but it can be reconfigured that a full ATX board can fit inside it. It allows you to put the PSU at the top and the front to allow there to be enough bottom room where you can put a full ATX. So the case is done by GamerStorm. I don't know if it's still available. It's a great case. It really, really is. It comes with, it ships with, a built-in water cooler, 120 millimeter water cooler. I'm seeing if they still have that particular case available, because it is just an amazing case. Yeah, there it is. I think that's it. Nope, that's not it. It's very similar to the one I have, but that's not it. I'm looking at the Ducase V2 liquid, and that is not it. I forget what mine is, and the box is long gone, so I don't have it. I built it 2 years ago. I'm pretty sure it was not called Genome. Nope, it's not that one either. I don't see it. I do not see the case, but there are other cases that are liquid. But this one was a micro ATX case. It was designed for a micro board, but you can mount the, and it gives you instructions to do this. It's not like I, you know, hacked it or anything like that. That I did some strange modification that wasn't designed for. DeepCool has a line that they call GamerStorm, and it has graphics cards and fans and water coolers, and it comes with Captain. It's a 120 millimeter water cooler. I'm not even seeing that on here. And it comes with that built into the case. And what they do with it to make it look really cool is they have a the water cooler goes to a reservoir that's lit by LED, and it's got a little speed indicator fan to let you know that the water is flowing and everything. And that's actually a slot for a standard SDS drive. And so your SDS drive is lit up as well. It's pretty darn cool. And it looks amazing. It absolutely looks amazing. It looks like something, you know, like Jay-Z built from JC 2 Cents. He's a content creator of custom built computers, like Bitwit and Paul's Hardware and Lionel and those guys. I just sort of like Jay-Z style. His YouTube channel is called JC 2 Cents, and he spells it J-A-Y-Z 2 Cents. And I think he's an amazing content creator. I love his stuff, and he has elevated himself in my mind to a very high level, because he does a review on a case on a computer system by Oracle that is built specifically for Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. It's a beautiful system. I mean, if money was not an object for me, I would totally buy this system. The way that the SDS cards just slide in, just click into place, and the etching on the glass that says Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020, and then it's got a graphic on the backside of the case. The back panel, I should say, the side panel that's not glass, in other words. It's a completely negative pressure case, which I totally believe in. All the computer builds that I build for myself and my friends are complete negative pressure. The idea of it is that it expels, all the air is leaving the case. All the fans are pushing the air out of the case, and that creates what they call negative pressure. And the negative pressure is vacuum, and the vacuum sucks in the cool air into the case, and then it's quickly being vented out through all of your fans. I have 3 fans at the bottom, 1 vent fan at the back, and a vent fan that's over the water cooler that pushes the air up through the water cooler reservoir and out the case through the top. And to me, negative pressure always made more sense. Now, the bad rap that it gets is that, oh, if you have a negative pressure case, it sucks in all that extra dust. Well, I don't think that that's true. That, you know, most of the cases now have removable, washable filters, and the filters catch that dust as it tries to enter the case. And so as long as you keep your filters clean and you do a little bit of maintenance on the inside, and I clean out my computer about every 6 months, and you're going to be fine. Now there's what they call equal pressure, where you have some fans drawing air in and some fans pushing air out. And the idea is, if it's equal pressure, there's no vacuum, and therefore you get less dust in the case. I have not found that theory to be proven to be true. And even Jay-Z talks about, you know, most of his builds, he tries to have an equal pressure case. If you look at Bitwit and Paul's Hardware, they all build, Lionel, they all build cases, builds, I should say, computer builds with equal pressure in mind. And I have found that it's much more advantageous. You get much better cooling if you use nature, and negative pressure is nature. Negative pressure creates a vacuum. That is a law of science, and that vacuum brings in the cold air. Now, your case has to be well vented. You got to have a way that air is going to come into the case. And there are some cases that are not very heavily vented very well. And so you got to pick the case that negative pressure build is gonna work for. But most of the cases out there have good ventilation. You need good ventilation if you're having an equal pressured case or a negative pressured case in the first place. Nobody has a positive pressured case. I don't see the advantage of just, you know, all the fans sucking, because if you suck in all the air, how is the air going to escape? There's, you know, it'll eventually escape the case, but it's not, you know, designed to do that. You're just hoping that the air finds a way to leave the case. And so you're not using the principles of science and the principles of nature to cool that case. You're hoping that air will find a way to escape the case with a positive pressure case. So nobody does a positive pressure case. They'll either do a negative pressure build or they'll do an equal pressure build. And I have found, my opinion, that negative pressure cases work much better. Now, there's places like Arizona and different geographical locations in North America that the dust content is extremely high, and they say that negative pressured cases there create an inordinate amount of dust that's hard to maintain and keep up with. I don't live in that location. I live in Florida. I live in Tampa, Florida. Go Lightning. And so I have found that if you have a equal pressured case and a negative pressure case, if there is a difference in dust, and I haven't seen any, it's minimal, minusculely minimal. And so that being the situation, why not have nature working for you and create a vacuum, the principles of science that, you know, it's, if there's a vacuum, air's going to find a way to fill it. And if your case is vented well enough, and that's true for most standard cases, you could go on Gamers Nexus and look at case reviews. And if the case has a horrible review as far as heat goes, then it's probably not a good case to build in anyway, whether you're doing an equal pressure build or a negative pressure build. But yeah, all things being equal, I believe in negative pressure builds because the air is naturally fills the case because of the laws of thermodynamics, and so, you know, your case is kept much cooler because you're constantly pushing the hot air that's in the case, that found its way into the case because of the vacuum, out of the case, and you're creating a constant vacuum, which means you're constantly sucking in cold air. To me, it's very simple. That's the way to build a case. It's always going to give you the best cooling temperatures that are possible. It's a micro ATX case that allows, if you reconfigure the power supply unit towards the top, and there's a place to put it at the top, it's designed to put it there. But it natively, you would put the power supply at the bottom, and that would leave you enough room for a micro ATX board. But if you put it in its alternative location, which is the top front of the case, it gives you that extra bottom space, just enough that you can put a full ATX board in. So I've never seen a case that does that. And the fact that the case is no longer available by Deep Cool Gamer Storm line, it's a shame because it's not there. The liquid cool cases are full. They do have liquid cool cases, which means it has built-in liquid coolers by Deep Cool. But those are full ATX mid-tower cases, which are going to be larger than the case that I have. So that's the reason why I got it. I looked at cases. I look at cases all the time. Even though I'm not building a system, I still look at cases. And my friend is who's a flight sim geek like myself. He's been running his flight simulator. He runs Microsoft Flight Simulator X10, FX10, FXX, or however you say it, for years. And he of course, has seen the new Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. And, you know, anyone that sees it that's a flight sim guy is like, that's what I want to get. And so we're going to do a build for him. I mean, you know, he's also a teacher. Did I say my wife was a teacher? Yeah, I believe I did. And, so, you know, income is always a stumbling block, when it comes to computer builds. And so, you know, we're probably going to do it, slowly, buying a part at a time here and there, and assemble his rig, and he'll be able to run the Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. And as we do that, I will give you updates on his build. And I'm going to build his build specifically for Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. My computer's 2 years old. It was built with X-Plane 11 in mind. And but I built it in such a way that it's right at the ideal level of build. If you go to Microsoft, if you're familiar with Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020, they have a minimum requirement, what do they call the middle one? Recommended requirement, and then they have the ideal requirement. If you want to run Flight Simulator 2020, you gotta be at or damn near ideal, or you're not going to have the experience that you're seeing on the YouTube channels and the updates and stuff that you know that really makes you want to get it. And so my computer spec is as follows. It is a I bought it when the 8th gen was out. And Intel does it in groups of two. So 8th gen was the new architecture. So we were fairly sure that 9th gen was going to be able to work. A 9th gen CPU is going to have the same architecture to work with this, with a motherboard of... and that's the way the pattern goes. Now, there's no guarantee. Okay, so let me tell you guys that. So if you're building a 10th gen system, because the 10th gen CPUs are out right now, and we'll get to AMD in a second, but if you're building Intel 10th gen, chances are the 11th gen CPUs are going to work with the 10th gen motherboards if they're beefy enough to handle you know, the enhancements and the specs of those CPUs. Chances are the 11th gen CPU is going to work on a 10th gen motherboard if the motherboard is good enough to do it. And so my philosophy is I always build, for me, this is me, I always build on the newest architecture that's out. So I would not build... I have, I'm sounding like an idiot. I would not build a 11th gen computer system. I would wait for the 12th gen, because then I can build a computer system that can upgrade, will have an upgrade path to the 13th generation. That's never guaranteed by Intel. That's just the pattern that they've had for the last several generations. So the 6th gen and the 7th gen was the same architecture. The 8th gen and the 9th gen is the same architecture. Now they have the new architecture, which is the 10th gen, and that will probably run the 11th gen architecture. And so, but there's no guarantee. Intel doesn't make any guarantees that that's the case. So you could buy a very beefy motherboard and have your 10th gen CPU and fully expect to be able to run the 11th gen CPUs. And that might not be the case. The 11th gen might be something completely different, and then you'll have to get a new motherboard for it. So there's always a risk involved. But yeah, because I'm not building a 10th gen computer, because I'm going to upgrade this computer to a 9th gen, I won't build again until the 12th gen, because I always build my systems with the newest architecture in mind. And I hope that made any sense to you guys. But yeah, so the way the specs stand, I built this when the 8th gen chips were just released. So I have a i7 8th gen. It's not a K chip, because the K chips ran very, very hot. In my case, came with a 120 millimeter cooler. And I have the non-K i7 8th gen chip. And because of a little quirk that works with ASRock, their new, when the BIOSes first come out, the BIOS is the program that runs the CPU and the RAM and all of that stuff long before your Windows environment is going. This runs all of that stuff. It's running all the hardware to be able to run Windows. So your BIOS is your first thing that loads, and then your Microsoft Windows loads on top of it. So the ASRock has a little quirk when they come out with a new generation, that their BIOS will run even a non-K chip at its highest turbo level, which is 4.7 on my chip, on all cores at all times. And so I knew I wouldn't be able to overclock the CPU to 5.0, but the difference between 4.7 and 5.0 when it comes to flight simulation is fairly negligible. The reason why that is because the newer flight simulators look to the GPU to really generate the power that they need to run. And they utilize the GPU by having your having the best clock speed possible on your CPU. So you want to get a CPU with a high clock speed, and then you want to have a fairly modern, fairly decent GPU to run the bulk of the actual simulator. So I'm giving a fairly simple explanations to things that are a little bit more complicated than that. And I apologize to all my builder listeners out there that will be going, oh, well, there's more to the story than that. But and yes, I'm aware of that. But I'm giving a generalization that somebody that's just getting into building, if they follow, you know, this philosophy, they're going to have a good system for running their flight simulator. Yeah, ASRock, that's a manufacturer of a motherboard. After a while, Intel will say, look, we don't want that. If it's a non-K chip, it's not supposed to be running turbo on all cores at all times. Please change your BIOS. So you don't want to update the BIOS too far. And they'll give you little clues. One of the clues that the ASRock does is, once you put in this new BIOS, you will not be able to put in the older BIOS. And they don't say that. They might not say that for the second BIOS upgrade or the third BIOS upgrade or the fifth BIOS upgrade. And this particular one, it was the sixth one, and you saw that warning. That let you know, that's their little clue to let you know, look, we're going to change our BIOS to the specifications that Intel wants, which means you're not going to be able to run your non-K chip at its highest clock speed on all cores at all times. As far as I know, ASRock's the only one that does this. And they get in trouble by Intel, they change the BIOS, and then your non-K chip is going to run the way that a non-K chip is designed to run, which is, fluctuating core speeds, clock speeds based on the core count and stuff like that. So because of that, I'm a big ASRock fan. And so now when you update the BIOS to run the next generation chip, like when I put my ninth gen chip in, they're probably going to put an i5 with a K, because the ninth gen chips run much cooler. They went back to the liquid metal cooling solution for their CPUs instead of the compound cooling solutions, which was a horror show. The chips were running just way too high in temperature. And so the ninth gen chips run very cool. So even with 120 millimeter cooling solution, I'll be able to put the i5 chip in there and overclock it to 5.0 or 5.1 or whatever I can get out of it, depending on the silicon lottery. The silicon lottery is just means that, what kind of the proficiency of the CPU that you got. There's minimum specs, and then there's chips that run above the minimum specs. When you have a chip that runs significantly above the minimum specs, you say that you won the silicon lottery. It's just sort of a catchphrase that builders use. So we're already at 42 minutes in this, so I'm going to have to hurry up. So I have a ASRock Extreme 4 motherboard that has, it's a very beefy motherboard. I knew that when the 9th gen chips came out that it would be able to run the 9th gen chips without any issue. So I spent a little more money on that motherboard. And I got an i7 non-K chip in there. I'm going to put a i5 9th. I think it's 9700K, I could be wrong, chip in there and overclock it and get a little bit higher clock speed. Now to the AMD guys, I don't know much about AMD builds because I predominantly do builds for flight simulators, and flight simulators, including the new one, looks at clock speed as its one of its major governing factors at how fast the program is going to be able to run on your system. And as it stands right now, Intel chips, at least as far as the 9th gen goes, I'm still studying the 10th gen, but I believe that it's true there too. Its clock speeds run a little faster than AMD clock speeds. Now, AMD chips do some things that are better than Intel. If you're a heavy content creator and you're going to be doing a lot of video editing and rendering and stuff like that, AMD, because of its multi-cores, that it has, so many cores, it can do those things better, because those things utilize all of your cores. A lot of games and a lot of simulations, if not all of the simulations, it's looking for the clock speed. It's not looking for the core count. Now, Microsoft Flight Simulator, I believe, does utilize multi-core, but I think once you get beyond four cores, definitely six cores, It doesn't go beyond that. It does not recognize the fact that your system has 12 cores and it's going to run so much better on a 12-core machine than a 6-core machine. And in fact, if you have an AMD with 12 cores and you have an Intel with 6 cores, but the Intel has a higher clock speed, the simulator is going to run better on the higher clock speed versus the multi-cores. So because I built rigs specifically optimized for running a flight simulator first, that's its main function. It functions as a standard computer that you can YouTube videos on, and you can play solitaire on or cruise the web on. That's its second function. But its first function is to run the simulator to the best of its ability. And so that's why I do Intel builds. It's not that I have anything natively against AMD. And when AMD comes up with higher clock speeds than Intel, and it's known that the flight simulators run faster than on AMD, then AMD will be my next build. And that could definitely be the case the way things are going. I'm fully prepared that my next build for my flight simulator could be an AMD build if the Intel chips are running at higher clock speeds and the flight simulator runs better on the Intel chip. Then I will continue to use Intel as CPU. So I have 32 gigabytes of 3000 RAM. That was the first upgrade. I went from 16 to 32. That's why I like the micro ATX boards versus, say, the ITX boards, which is the really small ones. I'd love to have a very small footprint desktop computer, because my computer is a desktop. It sits on the desk. And, my wife and I live in an apartment as it is right now, and the computer system is in the living room, so my flight simulator build is in the living room, and so I'm limited by space. And I have a 27-inch 440p ISP monitor, and I'm going to get into monitor speeds, because that's a huge thing that people were talking about, monitor resolutions. There's a lot of people that went out there and bought 4K monitors and don't have the graphics cards to really push those 4K monitors, or they, because they were going to get a 4K monitor, they bought, they were forced to buy a graphics card that they maybe weren't prepared to buy, in price. So I'm going to get in all of that on the second segment of this, which is the hardware needed to run Microsoft Flight 2020. I guess that would be the name of this particular episode. I have a 1080 Ti Zotac GPU, which was the top GPU that was available at the time. I spend my money on GPUs. I try to get the best GPU that's on the market, because I know that's going to translate into the best flight sim experience that I could possibly have. So that's where I try to spend my money. I spend my money on motherboard. I don't get like godlike motherboards. That's the highest end motherboard by MSI. And I don't spend $500 on a motherboard, but I will spend $220 on a motherboard, knowing that it's a beefy motherboard and that it can use, there's these things called MOSFETs and different things. And the more of those you have and the beefier those you have, the better the power distribution is, and that allows you to run higher CPUs. So I get a high-end motherboard, and with ASRock, the Extreme 4 has steadily been a great motherboard at a great price that will run the next generation CPUs without having to spend you know, $400 or $500 on a motherboard. So I spend a decent amount of money on the motherboard, and then I spend a lot of money on the GPU because I know that's going to give me the best bang for my buck at running Flight Simulator. Right now, the 1080 Ti is pretty equal to the ideal spec of the RTX GPUs from Intel, and it's right at about a 2080. As a matter of fact, there are some benchmarks that the 1080 Ti beats the 2080, but in most benchmarks and most specs, they're within 3% of each other, which in my opinion is a margin of error. So it's right at a 2080. So it meets that ideal as far as GPU goes. I have a CPU that's better than I'm not sure about that. I forget what the GPU, what the CPU spec is for ideal. I think it's, I think I'm at that level or surpass it. I have 32 gigabytes of high speed RAM, which is in the ideal range. And so, yeah, I'm pretty much running a system that is right at the ideal specification. And if you go to the Microsoft, you could Google it and type in minimum specs for Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020, and you'll find a page that will give you the minimum requirements, the recommended requirements, and the ideal requirements. I can tell you now, the minimum is not going to give you an experience that is anything like that you've been seeing. I also think it's fair to tell you guys that I was not part of the alpha testing, and obviously I was not part of the beta testing. I was an insider, so I did get the newest videos that was released and the newest screenshots that were released, but I was not an alpha tester. I find that frustrating to do that. You know, I like to use a program after it's done and ready for the marketplace. So, yes. So we're going to talk and we're going to compare a little bit, talk a little bit about P3D and X-Plane 11 and where it falls into the new Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. And we're going to continue on hardware and my building philosophy as far as hardware goes. And I'll talk about, you know, if you're not going to build and you're going to buy a computer system, what's a good computer system to buy to run Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. I have to tell you that go to Oracle Computers or go to Jay-Z's 2 cents, and he reviews the Oracle, and he says it. He's the first content creator, and he went up a few notches in my esteem level. He says, you know, everyone talks about Crysis. That's a game. If your computer can run Crysis, because it's a very it's a very performance oriented game that looks for the higher end systems. And he says, Crysis is nothing. Will it run Flight Sim? And I've been watching content creators for years, and they'll be talking about this game or that game. This game needs a lot of hardware to run it, or that game needs a lot of hardware to run it. And they never talk about flight simulation. And flight simulator, flight simmers know that, especially flight simmers that build and are familiar with the guts of the rig, know that nothing maxes out a consumer grade computer like a flight simulator. Nothing. If your computer can run a flight simulator at a high level, it's going to be able to run any game that's on the market at its highest level. That just goes without saying. And simmers know that. And all these custom builders that predominantly build systems for games they never mentioned that. And Jay's Two Cents was the first YouTube channel that mentioned that. Jay-Z Two Cents, I should say. And it's J-A-Y-Z Two Cents. That's his YouTube channel. Go to him. I think he's one of the best before he did this. Now that he did this, he's endearing in my heart. You'll see my, if you go to that video where he reviews the Oracle computer system, you will see my comment on there. It's probably in the top four or five of the comments. It was at the time that I recorded this. And he says, you know, nothing runs X's out of system more than Flight Simulator. But if money is no object, I'd go to his video, look at his review on the Oracle system, go to his link, and go to the Oracle webpage and see what's available there. That computer is drop-dead gorgeous. It is unbelievable. And but, you know, it's going to be very expensive. It doesn't allow you to see the price. From what I could tell, when I went to the webpage, you got to kind of go through several stages of the purchasing picking out the specs of the machine and all of that stuff, and then it might give you the price. But I couldn't find a way to just give me a general price on the machines without going through the process of ordering the actual machine. But I'm estimating somewhere in the probably $3,000 to $4,000 range. That's my guess. High two at least, depending on the specs that you pick. But yeah, I want to apologize to you guys for not coming out with a second podcast. And we're going to get on to the third and podcast really soon, probably within the next 4 to 5 days. And I appreciate everyone that's listened to the podcast so far. I hope you guys come back. I'm here. I didn't know that you guys were out there listening to me. And I will try to keep the content coming out for you guys. I definitely appreciate you listening to it. And I apologize again for waiting so long to come out with the second one. I just didn't think anybody was out there listening. And it glads my heart so much to see that that's not the case. So I hope everyone continues to stay safe. Take care. I look forward to listening to the next podcast. And I'll speak to you guys very, very soon. Bye-bye.